This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Appreciate you hanging out with us all night long. Sirius XM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We have the schedule finally out for Week 18 in the NFL with Week 17 in the books. Just dropped moments ago. We touched on the opening game, which will feature the NFC South being decided. The Carolina Panthers going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa's favored -3, totals 43.5. I like the under in that game. Your other game on Saturday will involve the one seed being on the line. Seattle going to San Francisco. Seahawks are laying 1.5, total of 49.5. We'll have more on that in a bit here. But I want to go back and look back on some of what went down earlier in the day in Week 17, because the AFC North is going to be decided as well when it comes to Week 18, because both the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to do battle. And that game, as you could have guessed, will be Sunday Night Football. I know you're all shocked by that, that that's what we decided on. But Baltimore's laying 3, totals 42.5, with the game being played in Pittsburgh. We got there because the Steelers had a chance to take care of business today against Cleveland, and they weren't able to do so. Pittsburgh got punked. They got absolutely punked by Cleveland because there was an obsession with limiting Myles Garrett today and him not getting his sack record against them, which I think prevented the Steelers from running an actual offense. But they got jumped 10-0. All of a sudden, you look up, they're losing, and the Browns just found a way to hold on. I was kind of shocked by it. Every step of the way, I was like, all right, Pittsburgh's going to figure it out here. Then they get down to the goal line with a chance to win it. And for some reason, on the final drive, Arthur Smith decides to target Denzel Ward, the best cornerback on the Browns, with multiple passes on the final drive, including the potential game winner to Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who, by the way, he still has to catch the ball, which is always like at best a 50-50 proposition. But still, why are you throwing in Denzel Ward's way? But the Steelers had a chance to put Baltimore away, and they blew it by losing to the Cleveland Browns earlier, 13-6. They didn't show up against a 3-12 team with the postseason on the line. To me, that's completely unacceptable. It's like, what are we doing here, Mike Tomlin? You're going to show up and beat teams you shouldn't beat, but not beat the teams you're supposed to beat? They're missing DK Metcalf, but it's so much bigger than that. They don't have an offense. Like, legitimately, there is not an offense. They went 3-for-15 on third down. Aaron Rodgers went 8-of-21, 38.1 completion percentage, his lowest of the season, 60 yards, passer rating of just 46.3, the second lowest mark for him in 2025. I'm looking at the Steelers, who are winless in their past five games, going up against teams that are 8-plus games below 500. That ties the longest streak in NFL history. When they face teams that are 8 or more games below 500, they have lost 0-4-1 in their past five games. And I'll give credit to Myles Garrett in the sense that he didn't get his record sack, but it felt like he was everywhere. He impacted major plays. He had a team-high 6 pressures, 39 pass rushes, and the Steelers were focused on neutralizing him instead of being creative on offense. When you don't have a guy like DK Metcalf, your one opportunity to stretch the field, you got to find another way to win. Instead, I felt like the whole game plan was, where's Myles Garrett on the field and how do we adjust to that? Instead of just doing what you do, don't react to what they're doing. Just do what you do. And I think that's a failure for Pittsburgh here, who were constantly chip blocking him or double teaming him. He was chip blocked or double teamed 16 times. That's 41% of the plays. That feels like an obsession. And that feels like getting away from the task at hand. If you're the Steelers, which is make the playoffs, win the division, and they failed to do that today. Now, there's going to be a lot of chatter about the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, Shedeur Sanders, coming off of this game. He went 17-23 for a 186, a touchdown, 2 interceptions, and ran the ball for 20 yards. There were some good plays. There were also some really bad interceptions. He's going to get credit for the Harold Fannin touchdown pass that he threw, but if we're being real, he missed the spot pretty bad, and he missed it so bad that the defensive back overran the route. Fannin looked up at the last second, had the elite athleticism to fall backwards into the ball and end up in the end zone. But it was such a bad pass, everyone was caught off guard. He'll get a credit for a touchdown, though, and there's going to be people who are going to be in my mentions on Twitter. They're going to hate that I'm saying this, But Shedeur Sanders has moments where I think he looks fine. And there's moments where he looks lost, like a couple of the interceptions that he threw today. One of them in particular where I'm just like, I need to know what you're seeing. But anyway, Shedeur Sanders met with the media following this game. The Browns did get the win. I don't want to be all negative. He did find a way to win the game 13-6. And Shedeur talked about his growth now starting a few games into his career.
I'm able to see the field and the game slow down for sure. I think the main thing is like, I just like throwing the ball. I just like throwing the ball a lot. And, you know, in some situations, you can't just throw your dog a bone sometimes. You gotta be able to know, like, when it's calculated risk. But, like, I feel like our players are better than their player. So I just gave my guy a chance. And we just ain't come down with it. And that's just how I go.
All right, I'm a bit conflicted on Shedeur Sanders. I think he's fine. I think he has potential to be good, but he doesn't have like elite traits. I think he understands how to play the position better. The one issue I have with his game is he holds on to the football entirely too long, lets plays go on too long, and he doesn't have the athleticism to extend them like you would want him to if he's going to do that. The clock needs to be quicker. There are moments where he looks fine, but in no way, shape, or form do I believe Shedeur Sanders is going to be starter day one next year for the Cleveland Browns. But the big news coming out of this game, Baltimore and Pittsburgh. AFC North is on the line following Pittsburgh's loss to Cleveland today. And Baltimore's 3-point favorites, 42.5 is the total. Steelers are 7-3 against the spread against the Ravens going back to 2021. Steelers 3-1 against the spread versus Baltimore at home since 2021. The under is 8-2 since 2021, 4-0 when the game's played in Pittsburgh in this series between the Ravens and the Steelers. I like the under 42.5 because DK Metcalf, 2-game suspension, not going to be available. I don't see how Pittsburgh is going to make chunk plays. And then Baltimore, 50-50 if Lamar plays. If he plays, do I even know what version of Lamar I'm getting? Do I know how much he cares? I don't know at this point. I've been the biggest Lamar backer, but I'm about over it. I'm about over defending him. Go do it, man, and I'll talk about how I was once on the team and I loved watching you play and all this stuff. But this year has put a bad taste in my mouth. I'm not enjoying what I'm seeing out of the Ravens, and I don't know what to make of this Lamar situation with some of the news stories that came out over the weekend. All right, earlier today, a couple of big events in the AFC East. One, the Patriots ended up clinching because they won 42-10 over the Jets. The Bills lost the Eagles 13-11. Philly won the game. They probably should have lost in the end. Hurts had 0 second half passing yards in this game. That's almost unthinkable. Buffalo scored 12 in the fourth quarter. They missed a PAT after their first touchdown, which prevented them being able to win on an extra point on their final touchdown of the game. They then went for two, and they went for the win. Allen missed a receiver in the end zone. And looking back on the call, you know, I understand why you do it. I just don't agree with doing it. So I understand going for two. Your thought process, I would tell you I wouldn't do that in that spot. Philly couldn't slow them down in the fourth quarter. They'd figured out a rhythm offensively. And Allen is a guy that, you know, if you give him that overtime frame to continue to dissect the defense, I do think he'd figure it out. But the Philly offense had done nothing in the second half. Hurts didn't throw for a single passing yard. Why would that change in overtime? You had completely stifled what they did offensively. Go play another frame of action, get a full fair shake at it with a possession in the full field, let your defense make another stop, and go win the game. I just thought it was a rush decision by Sean McDermott. I didn't think he needed to do that, and he addressed it when he spoke with the media following the loss.
Want to be aggressive, going for the win. You know, we feel like, you know, only a certain amount of time left at that point, and felt like we had a great call, great opportunity to go win it, and I'm going to be aggressive, so I'm not going to sit back.
Did having the kick blocked earlier impact your decision making?
Potentially. It wasn't everything, but you know, I trust Josh Allen with the ball in his hands, and I'd do it over again.
I understand the thought process. I just wouldn't have done it. I think at some point you have to acknowledge that a full extra frame of action in overtime with a possession and not having to play in that short field and everything that goes into it. I do think Buffalo had the advantage. They had all the momentum. For the Philly defense, though, they're dominant. I mean, they're as good as anyone in the league. It's a top three unit. And when Jalen Carter's healthy, it pays dividends. I mean, he is such a difference maker in the middle of that defensive line. And I thought he was a big part of why Buffalo had a lot of struggles early on getting this offense going. The Philly defense is going to carry them in the playoffs. The question is, how far is that? It's pretty wide open this year, but you are going to have to score points if you're going to win these games. Philly's 11-5. They're still alive in the battle for the two seed. And right now for Buffalo, they have a path in the AFC this year because there is no Mahomes, there's no Burrow, there may be no Lamar. But do any of us really believe the team is good enough? If you believe Buffalo can win the AFC, it is only because of Josh Allen. That is simply it. And then finally, because the Bills, who were the heaviest favorite to win a division this year in the NFL, did not win today, that means the Patriots are once again your champions in the AFC East for the first time since 2019. They beat the Jets 42-10. New England led this one 35-3 at the half. The Patriots are undefeated on the road in 2025, and Mike Vrabel talked about that after the game.
It was a tough one, the first one, just going all the way back to Miami, and I think that that was just a really important game for us, and you know, being able to battle and give up a punt return, answer with a kickoff return, you know, I mean, going all the way back and just big kick from Andy. And we've talked about all those things that have helped us along the way and talked about just unfinished business on the road and being able to, when we needed to, handle the environment and make critical plays and get off to a good start like we did today. So really proud of this, you know, football team and what they've been able to do. You know, anytime you travel, it's difficult.
12th time in NFL history, a team's gone 8-0 on the road in a season. Drake May, the first Patriot to have 5 touchdown passes in a game since Brady in 2017. First player in NFL history to have a 90% completion rate while throwing for 250 and 5 touchdowns. And he has shortened up in the MVP market as well.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Broadcasting from the Circus Sportsbook, downtown Las Vegas, I'm Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out with you all night long, SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. Week 17 in the NFL. One more game to go. The Falcons will host the Rams on Monday Night Football. We'll preview that in our next segment and our final segment. Michael Duarte, NBC LA, will join us with the lowdown on Stafford and company going on the road, coming off that loss on Thursday Night Football to Seattle. What do they have planned? Probably without Devontae Adams as well. We'll discuss Monday Night Football later on. But right now, want to look back on some of the action that went down earlier in Sunday's Week 17 games. And Jacksonville taking care of business against Indianapolis. They were pretty sloppy early on, but in case you missed it, they win 23-17. They cash as 4.5-point favorites. Game stays under the total of 48.5. We had the under. We had Brenton Strange over receiving yards. Those both got home in this game. And the Jaguars have won 12 games for the first time since 2005. Seventh straight win for them. One ahead of the Texans. They could win the division next week with a win over the Tennessee Titans, where they are big-time favorites in that matchup. And Liam Cohen, year one, comes over from Tampa Bay, and I think maybe some of the issues we're seeing with the Buccaneers offense, we can attribute to the fact that they have lost offensive coordinators back-to-back years. And Liam Cohen apparently knows what he's doing. He had a weird first press conference, but you know what? I'll take you back. I'll take you back to old Nick Sirianni when he was hired during COVID by the Philadelphia Eagles. He had a viral moment where his brain just stopped working. Trust me, I got a microphone in front of me, a camera with a red light on top of it that tells me when it's live. There are moments where this brain stops working. Some would argue it never really starts working. But my point is, Nick Sirianni in his opening press conference was trying to talk about theory and how he's going to be the head coach of the organization and what the tent poles of his run as the leader of men in the Eagles locker room is going to be. And he said something along the lines of, less thinking, talent take over. And it went viral, and it made the rounds, and everyone made fun of him. And he's got a Super Bowl ring he can wear on his middle finger to remind you of that moment every time you bring it up. Liam Cohen gets hired last year. He has a viral moment where he finds out that they do a thing called the Duval chant. And he goes in his press conference, and he tries to do it like he's one of the boys and goes, Duval. And I don't know why his voice did that. I don't have a way to break that down for you. All I can tell you was it was weird and it was awkward. But my man could coach football. Because Liam Cohen becomes the 11th head coach since 1970 to earn 12-plus wins in his first season as a head coach ever. He is the first coach to do it after taking over a four-win or worse squad. And I know someone's going to be in my mentions and say, hold on, Mike Vrabel just did that in New England. No, dummy. We're talking about being the first time ever as a head coach. Vrabel was already a head coach in Tennessee. So before you get all outraged that I left off your team, because that's one thing I notice. If I say something about a team that you don't like and it's your team, you get really upset. I have a question. Are you not a sports bettor? Because as a sports bettor, there are times where you have to understand how to evaluate your own team. In fact, that is the team you should be betting against the most because you should know the spots where they'll come up short. It's okay if people don't talk about your team in the positive light all the time. But I do feel like people are always trying to poke holes, and New England fans especially get really butthurt if they think they're not being included in the conversation as if they weren't the entire conversation for the last 30 years. Anyway, I digress. Back to the Jaguars. Because Liam Cohen, what he's done year one's been tremendous. Love watching the Jacksonville Jaguars, specifically defensively, come alive this year. They're a totally different team. And Trevor Lawrence, he threw his first pick in 5 weeks today. So a bit of a ding there, but I mean, that's five straight weeks for Trevor Lawrence not turning the ball over. He had two rushing touchdowns, finished with 263 yards, 23 for 37. And as of right now, the Jacksonville Jaguars have scored 433 points. With one game to spare, that is the most points they have ever scored in a single season. 2017, they scored 417. 2007, they scored 411. 2022, 404. 1999, 396. This year, 433, heading into the final week of the season. And that, to me, is all coaching because they did not look this way under the previous regimes. And Liam Cohen talked about the mindset his team has despite already being playoff bound.
Yeah, we talked about that on Wednesday. That I mean, we didn't even address making the playoffs as a team. We haven't really talked a ton about goals, about the division, playoffs, conference, Super Bowl. Like, we have not had any of those conversations as a team. Not really on purpose. More so just because you're really trying to focus on getting better. Because there's so much to coach off of every week for us. And even through a lot of wins, we're able to coach off a lot of stuff. And keeping the mindset pretty singular on 1-0 each week, that's just been the mindset and mentality that these guys have had. And I've appreciated that, and we fed off of each other that way.
And Liam Cohen. Hey, we're not going to win our Coach of the Year bet on him, but he's done what we wanted him to do. I mean, the Jaguars are winning 12 games. Haven't done that in 20 years. And that's because of that guy taking over. Right now in the market, Jacksonville's 13-1 to win the Super Bowl, 5.5-1 to win the AFC. Look, it's the defense that's really carrying them. The offense is doing just enough. The pickup of Jacoby Myers is certainly paying dividends. You're seeing him get more acclimated. But since he got there, has anyone noticed Parker Washington has emerged as a go-to guy? Follows up 145 receiving yards last week with 8 for 115 today against Indy. And while maybe they lack like that elite top-end superstar offensive talent around Trevor Lawrence at the skill spots, this is a really formidable group of skill guys. Like, they're not going to blow you away, but in the backfield, Etienne with Tootin, I like the combination. It's very, very solid. Receiving-wise, you're going to go Washington, Myers, and Brian Thomas Jr., who could still potentially revert back to the form from a year ago. I mean, it's a really good core of receivers. Is it great? No, it's good. And then Brenton Strange, as long as he's healthy, that guy produces at the tight end spot. Going along with a defense that always stops the run, they're going to be in ball games. They just got to make a few plays. They have the players to do it. The problem is, do you trust Trevor Lawrence when it matters the most? But at the same time, who do you really love in the NFL this year? Specifically in the NFC. Talk to me. Tell me at Dustin Sweetelson, at VSiN Live, who do you really have conviction with? Because right now, the favorites in the market, it's Seattle at plus 270. Sam Darnold, Let me check my watch. This is about the time where Sam Darnold turns into a pumpkin again. The Rams are plus 270. They just lost to Sam Darnold, who I just mentioned is about to turn into said pumpkin. Then you have the Niners at 4.5-1. They don't play a lick of defense. The Eagles are 5-1 in the NFC. They don't play a lick of offense. Chicago's 9-1. But at some point, pulling the rabbit out of the hat and these miracle wins in the fourth quarter, you just can't rely on that. Then you have the Packers at 9.5-1. They don't have their two best defensive players. So again, I will tell you, in the NFC, that's there. In the AFC, Denver and Bo Nix, New England and Drake May, who played the softest schedule since the late 90s, Buffalo and Josh Allen, who get no help at receiver, where Brandon Cooks was their leading receiver today. They don't have a defense that can stop the run or the pass. You're going to trust Buffalo at 5-1. Jacksonville then comes to us at 5.5-1. You have Houston at 6-1. Houston's defense is great. I still have questions about C.J. Stroud, although I have a ticket on Houston, and I want that to come to fruition. My point is, why not Jacksonville? Why not? Because I just poked holes through every contender, NFC, AFC, all the way through. Jacksonville may not be great, but great may not be what you need to be to get it done in the year of our Lord, 2025. I don't know if I'm running the ticket window to bet it right now, but I can tell you I'm thinking about it. It is currently marinating because this late in the year, it is very rare you find value on the board. And value is in the eye of the beholder, right? Do you think that that number is going to be something that you can make money on down the road? That's the question you have to ask yourself. And Jacksonville 13-1 to win the Super Bowl, I do think there's a world. I think there's an element where we go back and watch the Jacksonville Jaguars year in review, and that loss that they had to Houston and Davis Mills, the way they blew that lead, that ignited a spark that they just never let go of, and they carried it all the way through the playoffs. These are the types of things that happen with teams that tell their story. And right now, I am not blown away by anyone who is available to win the Super Bowl. And if they win the AFC, they're taking on the Rams. They're taking on the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. You can hedge on that ticket some. So that is something I think about when it comes to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The other story out of that game, Phillip Rivers, it is going to be the end of the road for him. 17-30 for 147 yards, a touchdown and a pick. Here was him talking about his performance and what is likely his final game ever.
The thought of meaningless games, which I know that gets thrown around, and it is in the sense of it doesn't affect the postseason. There's no impact on the postseason, but to say a game is meaningless is not in my DNA, and I don't think it's in these guys. It's obviously what you saw today from an effort standpoint, because those games we played in the backyard when we were 10 years old weren't meaningless, right? Nobody gave a riff about those, but you went home crying or you went home happy, you know? So there's no such thing, and that's the philosophy of everything matters. You know, everything we do matters. There's no meaningless conversation, you know? So I think that's just a personal approach, but I think there's a lot of guys in the locker room that share that same sentiment, and I thought that effort was clear today, but it wasn't enough. Right, the effort. I don't think the effort's ever been questioned of these guys, but it doesn't mean you're going to win the game.
Phillip Rivers is 28-1 to win Comeback Player of the Year. I've hated on this story every step of the way, and now I sit here considering maybe it's pulling at the heartstrings and he can actually win it. We'll preview Monday's card of action next on Cashing Out.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it, it's Cashing Out VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out with you all night long. We'll have a full preview of Monday Night Football. Michael Duarte, NBC LA, will join us in our next segment. But right now, it's time to preview the entire Monday card in our VSiN Morning Bet segment. Also, a little grip it and rip it, looking at Week 18 lines in the National Football League. Right now, I'm looking at Monday Night Football. The Rams are laying 7 against the Falcons on the road in Atlanta. Your total is 49.5 for Monday Night Football. The Rams, the season for them was last week, Thursday, to be the one seed and potentially knock off Seattle. Instead, they end up losing that game. And now they're going on the road to Atlanta, where I'm very curious of how this game plays out here. The Falcons have won 2 in a row. And under Kirk Cousins, it's very odd to see them find their stride in this instance. Coming into this matchup for the Rams first, Matthew Stafford is currently your MVP favorite. in the betting market. It's shortened up a little, minus 230. Drake May is plus $1.80, but he leads the league 4,179 pass yards, 40 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Puka Nacua leads the NFL 114 receptions, coming off a career-high 225 against Seattle. The defense has allowed 36 points over the last two games after allowing 16.3 in weeks 1 through 12 for the Rams. So that's really interesting as Atlanta's offense gets going. Byron Young, 7th, Jared Verse, 13th in quarterback pressures in the NFL this year. And one big key for this game to me is watching how the Rams defend Bijan Robinson, because they neutralized Jahmyr Gibbs when they faced him. Gibbs held to 38 rush, 30 receiving yards. Can they do the same against Bijan Robinson here? And speaking of Robinson, he leads the NFL with 2,026 scrimmage yards. And when you look at this Falcons offense, some of it because Drake London was out of the offense recently, but Kyle Pitts in a contract year, in what may be his final game as an Atlanta Falcon, could continue to go out with a bang. Last four games for Pitts, 7.8 receptions per game, 98.8 receiving yards per game, one touchdown per game. Now, Drake London's return did impact him last week, 7 for 57 and a touchdown, but I don't know if there's a slot corner who can really slow down Kyle Pitts this week. London's going to have Emmanuel Forbes Jr. on him. That's a big size mismatch if you want to look at his player props. And this defense for Atlanta, they have 50 sacks. Second in the NFL, only behind Denver, which was kind of shocking when you look at it. I did not realize that they were just that high end in terms of getting to the quarterback. And for injuries, Davante Adams is doubtful for the Rams. Guard Kevin Dotson's out. Alaric Jackson, the tackle, is questionable. That'll be big going up against that front for Atlanta that gets after quarterbacks. For Atlanta, Drake London listed as questionable. Coming into this game, the Rams 11-4 against the spread, 8-7 to the over. The Falcons 8-7 against the spread, 8-7 to the under. McVay 6-5 on Monday Night Football, 9-4 to the under. Raheem Morris 2-0 against the spread, 3-0 to the under on Monday Night Football with the Falcons. McVay is 6-1 against the spread as a road favorite of 7.5-14. McVay 28-14 to the under when the total is 49.5 or more. I took the Falcons at home, plus 7.5 yesterday. Had that up at VSiN.com/picks. I'm also on Blake Corum over rushing yards. I think with the playoffs coming and wanting to save Kyron Williams, I think that's way more Blake Corum in this matchup on the road against Atlanta. Also, in terms of first touchdown scores, going Drake London 11-1, mismatch against Forbes. Kanata Mumfield at plus 1750. For the Rams, he had 8 targets without Adams last week. Also taking a flyer on Blake Corum at 11-1. Looking at Kyle Pitts, 13-1. And we're going to go with a couple of bombs here. David Sills, 80-1 first touchdown. And Tutu Atwell, 80-1 first touchdown. That's what we're going to do when it comes to Monday Night Football. But I really like the Falcons catching the 7.5 at home, if you can get it. All right, with that will be the final game of Week 17. Let's do what we do every week and look at the next week's lines in the NFL, the last full slate edition of Grip It and Rip It here. Carolina going to Tampa Bay on Saturday. That will be your early game, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. Bucks laying 3, totals 43.5. Give me the under 43.5. I don't trust either offense at all, especially with a lot of pressure. Seattle is at San Francisco. Seahawks laying 1.5, totals 49.5. The one seed is on the line. Ooh, I have to go San Francisco at home plus 1.5. Sam Darnold, week 18 with a chance to be the one seed. Deja vu, anyone from a year ago? Now Sunday's action. Indy going to Houston. Texans laying 10, totals 40.5. I'll take the under. Riley Leonard starting against that defense, putting the offense on ice. Yeah, under would be the way I'd look there. Vikings are laying 6.5, hosting the Packers. The total in that game, 37.5. Call me crazy. I think over 37.5 might be the play. That number might be a little bit too low. Browns are at the Bengals. Cincy's laying 7. 44.5 is the total. I think the over is the way I'd look there. I think Cincinnati is going to be able to score against Cleveland, and everyone scores against Cincinnati defense. So give me the over, 44.5 there. Tennessee's catching 10.5. They're on the road at Jacksonville. Total in that game is 46.5. I would lean Tennessee plus 10.5. I think it's a very big number in division for them to be laying in this situation there. All right, Dallas is at the Giants, where the Cowboys are laying 5.5. Total in that game is 52.5. I like the over in that game. Giants offense has gotten a little bit more wide open, even though they don't have some of their best players and neighbors in Scadabo. But people move the ball against Dallas. Dallas defense on the road, I don't really trust them there. Both teams are really suspect at corner. I expect the receivers to really have good games on both sides in this matchup. I'd also think about the Giants plus the 5.5 to finish the Mike Kafka run on a high note. New Orleans is at Atlanta. And right now the Falcons laying 2.5, totals 42.5. I would take the Saints plus 2.5. Short week for Atlanta coming off Monday Night Football. And I think Tyler Shuck, there's something there. More on him to come a little bit later. We've got 60-1 on him to be Offensive Rookie of the Year. It's time to hedge and get creative because I did not anticipate being in this situation, full disclosure. So, but I think Tyler Shuck's got something on the road. I kind of like him catching the points. If we can get a field goal, I'd wait out for that because right now the juice is minus 115 on the Falcons at minus 2.5. Jets are at Buffalo. Bills laying 11.5. Totals 39.5. I guess the under. But, I mean, that game I want no part of. Miami is at New England. Pats are laying 10. Totals 45.5. New England can still be the one seed. Oh, it's Quinn Ewers coming off a win. I'd think about laying it with New England, but maybe the Pats team total is the best way to look in that game. Kansas City's laying 6 at Las Vegas. Totals 35.5. Ooh, I think you got to go under 35.5. You got to go under 35.5 with the quarterback play that you're going to see there. Detroit's going to Chicago. The Bears are laying 2.5. Totals 49.5. I think Dan Campbell playing for pride against his pupil and Ben Johnson. Want to finish the season on a high note despite missing the playoffs. I think the Lions plus 2.5, but I don't want that. Commanders are at the Eagles, where Philly's laying 7 and a hook at the link. Totals 42.5. I think under is the way to look. I think that defense for Philly shows up. The offense, even against Washington, I don't know what they're going to do, especially with the postseason coming, having to play a game the following week. I would think under 42.5 would be the way I'd look in that game. Arizona's going to the Rams. Rams laying 8.5. Totals 46.5. Again, under is the way I'd look there. Chargers are at Denver. Broncos laying 7 and a hook. Totals 39.5. Bad recipe to have no offensive line and a quarterback who had surgery a few weeks ago on his hand. I'm not laying 7.5 with Denver. I think about the under 39.5 there. And then finally, this one's moved. Ooh. Baltimore laying 3.5 now at Pittsburgh, total of 42.5. I like the under in this game, under 42.5. At 3.5, I would take the Steelers. I'm strongly considering that. I think we're still stuck valuing the Ravens how we looked at them in the offseason. So that is where we stand when it comes to grip it and rip it. We also have a bowl game, Georgia Southern, taking on Appalachian State in the J-Lab Birmingham Bowl on Monday. Right now, Georgia Southern's laying 7.5, totals 58.5. App State's there despite being 5-7. Georgia Southern won their regular season meeting with App State 25-23 on the road. Georgia Southern had almost 500 yards of offense, 352 through the air. App State went 4-6 on fourth down for 425 yards. But App State is down 2 quarterbacks, so they're in the portal. They also have a bunch of their secondary that won't be playing in this game. And Georgia Southern is one of the worst defenses in the nation, allowing 6.54 yards per play. Right now, when it comes to this game, the only way I can look is either Georgia Southern laying 7 or under 58.5, because I am not sure how App State is going to score points even against a bad defense like Georgia Southern, because they're going to play quarterback with absolutely no experience. At least the 2 quarterbacks gone had some experience there. So that is where we stand with the bowl game. I also have a couple NBA player props I'll share with you up at VSiN.com/picks. You can go check those out. Hey, we talk all the time about making smarter bets, and smart advertisers are doing the same with Mission Media. If you want real results, Mission Media connects your brand with audiences that actually engage. From premium podcasts and connected TV to data-driven digital campaigns, they deliver measurable ROI. And as VSiN's exclusive ad partner, Mission Media gives you direct access to one of the most loyal, action-oriented sports audiences anywhere. Your brand deserves more than impressions. It deserves influence. Get started at VSiN.com/advertise or email advertising@VSiN.com. How will the Rams look on Monday Night Football on the road in Atlanta? We'll break it down on the other side of Cashing Out.
Welcome back to cashing out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Right now is the best time of year for bettors, and the all-new Boomer Sportsbook is bringing you the action. Football, hockey, basketball, and more. Use code VSiN250 when you sign up for a Boomer's mobile account, and they'll match your first deposit up to $250 in bonus bets. Plus, get minus 105 on all pro football spreads every regular season game. Download the Boomer Sportsbook app today. Learn more at betwithboomer.com. Must be 21 or older. Terms and conditions apply. Bet responsibly. Welcome back in. It's Cashing Out, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. We've got an interesting Monday Night Football game coming our way between the Falcons and the Rams. To help us dissect the matchup, we're going to go to the Progressive Guest Line. Welcome in our old buddy from NBC LA. Michael Duarte is with us, and he joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Check Michael out on X at Michael J. Duarte. So talk to me, man. We saw what went down earlier with San Francisco staying alive for the one seed. Now the Rams going to Atlanta, laying 7, a total of 49.5. How do you anticipate the Rams looking in this primetime game?
Dustin, that's a great question. Now that the 49ers have beaten the Bears, which I believe eliminates the Rams from taking the one seed, because essentially who wins this Rams-Seahawks game in Week 18 is going to win the NFC West. That could change on how the Rams want to approach things. I know Devontae Adams is not going to be playing. They're calling him doubtful for that game on Monday Night Football. Alaric Jackson, tight end, he's going to be questionable or doubtful. Tyler Higbee is eligible to be activated off the IR. They're not going to activate him. They're missing a starting cornerback. So they're beat up a little bit, and now that they can't get that first round bye, Dustin, I think you might not see as much aggressiveness from the Rams in this matchup with the Falcons and their old friend, former defensive coordinator Raheem Morris, who was their defensive coordinator when they won the Super Bowl against the Bengals a few years ago. It'll be interesting to see just how they go for it. I like the under in this game. You mentioned that 49.5 Rams lane 7. Kirk Cousins has been playing well now that he's taken over the starting quarterback job for the Falcons. And that defense has also been playing incredibly well the last couple games against the Cardinals and Saints. The Rams are offense is a whole other story, probably the top in the league. But I like the under in this game.
Talk to me about the Rams defense, because weeks 1 through 12, they allowed 16.3 points per game. Now over their last two, allowing 36 points in that span. How do you see them matching up? I know they like to get after the quarterback. They like to pressure a guy like Kirk Cousins, who's not very mobile here. But do you expect this defense could get right in this spot, obviously, like in the under?
Yeah, you know, I'm not worried about the defensive front being able to put pressure on the Atlanta Falcons. Their offensive line is not one of the best in the NFL, of course. And you look at two now Pro Bowlers in Jared Verse and Byron Young. Those guys pull their hair back and they get after the quarterback, Dustin. I think those guys can put pressure. I didn't even mention Kobe Turner, who's been absolutely sensational in these last few games as far as hurries on the quarterback and sacks, the maestro they love here in Los Angeles. If the Rams, though, Dustin, have a weakness, if they have a kryptonite, it is that secondary. And as I mentioned, they're going to be without a starting cornerback. Deion Kendrick is supposed to be fitting in. Quentin Lake, who's been on IR the last 6 weeks, he's probably not going to be activated for the playoffs. That's their leader on defense, the guy with the green dot most of the time calling the plays back there. So I still like the defense to be able to put pressure on Kirk Cousins, but Kirk Cousins will be able to throw. That's mean if you've got a guy like Kyle Pitts in your fantasy league, Drake London, who just came back last week from injury and played well against the Cardinals, Bijan Robinson can catch receptions out of the backfield. That's a guy I know the Rams have specifically been targeting and strategizing for this week as far as a defensive scheme. But I think that Rams secondary is their weakness, and I think you're able to pass on them as we saw the Seahawks do when they mounted that fourth quarter comeback last week.
Yeah, could be a good game for Drake London. Could be a good game for Kyle Pitts with some of the size advantages that they're going to have with that secondary. Michael Duarte is our guest, NBC Los Angeles, at Michael J. Duarte on X on the Progressive Guest Line. Yeah, this is tough for the Rams, just the motivation and everything that's going to go into it. Now, no Devontae Adams. He's doubtful for this game. I can't imagine they risk that. Do you see anyone benefiting in that passing game, like a Konata Mumfield maybe, a Tutu Atwell? Who do you think benefits the most from no Devontae Adams here?
Yeah, you know, look for a guy, Xavier Smith. He's a guy they target on deep balls. He made two catches for like 50 yards last Thursday against the Seahawks. Mumfield, same kind of thing. If you like a guy to receptions, the Rams like to use three tight end sets. So you're looking at a rookie like Terrence Ferguson out of Oregon, who had a big game against Seattle last week. It seems like he's finally developing that chemistry with Matthew Stafford. You know, there's a lot of go for the tight ends. Those are three. Colby Parkinson's another guy that has caught touchdowns, I believe, four or five in the last 7 weeks. That's another guy that I think I like as far as getting more catches. Tutu Atwell, Xavier Smith, and Mumfield, like I mentioned, they're going to get some targets. They're going to be like in that 2 to 3 catch, 30, 40 yard range. But I don't know if that's worth it as far as you laying down a parlay or laying down, you know, an over, or even trying to play them in fantasy if you guys are fantasy sports bettors out there. But one thing I will point to, Dustin, the Atlanta Falcons run defense is not among the best in the NFL, which means guys like Kyren Williams, Corbin is another guy. Corum is another guy. Blake Corum, I like. That's kind of like a two-headed monster, the Rams rushing attack that they have. I know they didn't do too well against the Seahawks. I know Corum found the end zone, but the Seahawks run defense is one of the tops in the league. So now you're going against the Falcons, who aren't the tops. You just saw the Arizona Cardinals run all over the Falcons last week. That is not something that the Arizona Cardinals are known to do this year, as bad as they've been. So I think Kyren Williams touchdown, anytime touchdown, Blake Corum anytime touchdown. Those are two bets that I like to lay against this team. I think maybe the Rams rushing for over 100 yards is something else I could see, but maybe not an individual. I think Kyren Williams and Blake Corum will split carries.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm on Corum over rushing yards. I think Kyren Williams, maybe they save him a little bit for the postseason, let Corum get another shot. He's been getting worked in more and more. I'll ask you about this, not about this game specifically, but we've got the one seed on the line with Seattle and San Francisco on Saturday. You know both these teams well from covering the Rams. Right now, Seattle's favored on the road in Santa Clara, laying 1.5 and a total of 49.5. If I had to force you to choose who ends up winning that one and ends up the one seed in the NFC, who do you think it ends up being in the NFC West here?
I like Seattle just because they've been in the driver's seat. They have all the momentum going in, but man, and look, we know the San Francisco 49ers are beat up on defense this year. They're without Bosa. They're without Wagner. They're without a lot of their heavy hitters. But you can't argue with the momentum the Rams have picked up. They just keep winning despite the fact that they've been injured all year. Brock Purdy had a great game tonight against the Bears. It's a tough, but I'm going to go with Seattle. I just think that they are better suited to take that one seed. They know what's on the line. They took care of business by beating Carolina earlier today. So give me Seattle laying those points to go into Levi Stadium in Santa Clara and win that game, win the division. And then it's just going to determine on where the Rams and 49ers fall as far as the 5 or 6 seed. Are we going to Philly? Are we going to Carolina? I know that Carolina loss opened up the door for Tampa Bay. Who knows what could happen there in that NFC South division. But I like Seattle to take care of business and keep that one seed moving forward.
The irony of going back to Philly where they blew a game or going back to Carolina where they lost outright, and yet they are right? The team right now who are still the favorites at the top of the Super Bowl betting board at plus 475. The irony in them getting revenge in the postseason would be amazing. Hey, man, I appreciate you doing this tonight, staying up late, previewing Monday Night Football. Hopefully we'll be chatting about a very long playoff run for the Rams here. He is Michael Duarte, NBC Los Angeles, at Michael J. Duarte on X. I appreciate you, brother. Have a good one.
Anytime. Happy holidays and have a happy new year, Dustin.
Happy new year, Michael. Happy new year to everyone. It's coming up here, 2026. I like to claim it's going to be different than the last years, but I also have told myself past resolutions. I'm not going to lie to myself anymore. I'm 40 years old. This is probably who I am. Probably the best version of myself from here on out. It's all downhill from here. Not to get all negative. Right? Anyway, that's where we stand with the new year. Real uplifting message to start your week. Oh, man. My apologies. Anyway, it's been a fun show. We've covered a lot of ground. Again, for Monday Night Football, I like the Falcons catching the 7.5. I bet that yesterday. I'm on Corum on his over rushing yardage as well. In terms of first touchdown, I mentioned we're doing a couple bombs. David Sills, 80-1. Tutu Atwell, 80-1. Kanata Mumfield at plus 1750. Drake London at 11-1. Kyle Pitts at 13-1. And there might be one more that I'm missing here. Corum, 11-1. Those should be it for my first touchdown bets. I'll tweet them out a little bit later at Dustin Sweetelson. But I think we're in for a really weird Monday Night Football game. Now that the Rams have their situation handled where they're not going to end up being the one seed with San Francisco beating Chicago on Sunday Night Football and the one seed coming down to week 18 with the Seahawks and the Niners. So that's where we stand with the NFL. A couple of college bets I just want to share that I did add earlier up at VSiN.com/picks. I am going to hedge a Texas Tech future of 19-1 to win the title. I'm going to bet Oregon -120 on the money line. Try to monetize the ticket. And then also, I went under in Miami and Ohio State. That number got steamed up to 42.5. That is way too high. We are looking at a very low-scoring game between two elite defenses. That'll do it for us here on Cashing Out, but stay with VSiN all day long. We've got you covered beginning at 7 a.m. Eastern time with VSiN by the Books. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. We'll see you next time on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.